Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. According to a new study, Europeans enjoying higher mental well-being live healthier lives as they age. And what contributes to healthier living? Well, eating more cheese and fruit, among other things, the researchers found. And here in Wisconsin, of course, it's no surprise that eating cheese makes a lot of people happier. We're going to talk about that research and a whole lot more with our guest, John Lucey, who is director of the Center for Dairy Research at UW-Madison. He's a professor in the food science department, a researcher on the functionality of dairy foods. So maybe you found that eating cheese improves your mental health. I always feel better after I eat some cheese. You may have some questions about how cheese became a staple in the diets of so many Wisconsinites. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. John Lucey, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
You're very welcome, Larry. Happy to be here.
Well, I mean, eating cheese, according to this study, eating cheese is not the only reason they enjoyed improved mental health, but certainly caught our attention here in America's Dairyland. What are your thoughts on the study?
Well, I think it's an interesting observation from this study, but if you look at it from what we know about cheese and what's the materials and components in cheese, to me it wasn't so surprising. Because this was, as we age, I think the context of the study was about healthy aging. And as we age, we do need key nutrients, especially things like protein, to make sure we keep our own muscle mass, or we start to lose it, and then we start to lose mobility. And we want to have strong bones, hip fractures, you think about all the other things that happen as people get older. So having minerals like calcium, phosphate, and other kind of things, which cheese will be rich in. So again, that would make sense, that it would help people stay healthier and so on. And of course, then if you look at the whole package of nutrients that are present in cheese, you got protein, you got minerals, you got a lot of different types of vitamins. All of that together is a great package. Now, one thing they have found in more recent years too is that we need to kind of unpack some of the components a little bit more too. For example, what I mean by that is, the proteins in cheese, because cheese is a fermented process and there's enzymes and bacteria growing in it, they break down the proteins to what we now call bioactive peptides, which is small parts of the protein that actually have almost like a response in our body, like drug-like responses. Some of those are very beneficial. One of the in particular that's very interesting is some of these little peptides can reduce high blood pressure as well, like hypertension. So again, these are all important kind of benefits from having cheese. So does it when you look at that package and think about having a higher consumption of that, having healthier aging, it doesn't seem that surprising to me.
No, it and of course, as they were saying, there are other things that come into play here, but cheese is playing a role for sure.
Yes, and remember, when you think about the wide range of things we can eat, the cheese, because the lactose, the sugar, is already fermented, it doesn't contain any carbohydrates as well. So you're talking about something that's high in protein and fat, but doesn't have a lot of carbohydrates, and also may contain beneficial bacteria. Some of the cheeses that we eat will contain probiotic type of bacteria again. So a lot of different factors that could, in different ways, could have helped our outcome. But of course, it's not surprising that fruits and vegetables were important in that factor too. So it's not just about cheese. Of course, we think about cheese a lot here in Wisconsin.
We do indeed. And that's one reason I think we have a Center for Dairy Research. Talk about the center. Tell us what goes on at the center.
Well, the center was originally founded as a partnership between the dairy farmers here in Wisconsin and the university, mainly to look at ways to, look at new value-added products that could be made from milk. And we think about that, we were created in the 1980s. But if you look at now, there's hundreds of different types of specialty cheeses here in the state of Wisconsin, giving us all kinds of fun and enjoyable textures and tastes and flavors. And that's been one of the things that we have spent most of our time on, is working on researching specialty cheeses. And we also do a lot of training. So we train our cheesemakers here in Wisconsin. So about 1,000 people from the industry come to our Babcock Hall every year for short courses and training, so they can learn the art and science of making cheese and other dairy products. We run courses on butter making and milk pasteurizing and so on as well. So I think people look to our center really as a place for, you know, kind of innovation of new kind of varieties of things that can be made, or products that can be made from dairy and milk, as well as all this training activity we do as well for our industry to keep it at the cutting edge.
And there's a new dairy research facility now being built in Prairie du Sac, $55 million, I think, of federal dairy research facility.
Yes. So the U.S. Dairy Forage Center, which is from the USDA, is partnering with our own university and our own College of Ag to build this new state-of-the-art facility. So that's very exciting. You know, there's many people who want to know more and improve more about our sustainability, for example, within our dairy industry. And so having state-of-the-art facilities to look at the effect of feeds on methane emission from cows and study that with latest technology to do it. We are doing a small little project with the U.S. Dairy Forage Center, and they were investigating a particular type of seaweed as a minor feed additive that could be given to dairy cattle, and then seeing if that reduced the amount of methane that they produced from everyday activities. And we wanted to know, does that have any impact on our dairy products, our milk, our cheese, and so on? So we took some of that products, and we were making small batches of cheese in our center as well. So again, looking at ways that we can reduce our overall footprint, and no better place than have state-of-the-art facilities just down the road from us here at UW-Madison.
Wisconsin, we've lost, about 30% of our dairy farms since, between 2017 and 2022, I believe. That's according to USDA. Do we need to reverse that trend? Or if so, what needs to be done to reverse that trend?
It is a long-term trend. I mean, if you look at the numbers going back, it's been a long-standing trend. There was hundreds of thousands of farmers in the 1940s and 1950s across the Midwest, and we're down to small numbers now. So it's been a dramatic change. I think, the things, what can we really do about it? I think when we started a program a couple of years ago with funding from the USDA, it's called the Dairy Business Innovation Alliance. And it's a partnership with the dairy industry and ourselves, and it covers the Midwest region. And what we do is that if farmers want to take on a farm business related to making a dairy product and maybe selling it from their farm or through a store or through a local farmer's market, we give out grants to them to help them establish a farmstead business. And so I just looked up the numbers today. Since we founded, we've given out over 200 awards across the Midwest, not just in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, we've given out 88 awards, and about 35 farmstead operations have got grants from it. A total amount of grants here in Wisconsin were over $6 million. And the idea there is that if you were a farmer and you were thinking, can I bring some extra revenue in? Can I take the milk I'm producing for my cows and for my farm and make ice cream or bottled milk or some cheese? We help that person with some grants to help them get some of the equipment, and then help them with some of the technical side about how to make those products as well. I think we need to start thinking about how to bring more revenue to these farms as one aspect of keeping them in business.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. John Lucey, our guest today, director of the Center for Dairy Research at the UW-Madison, professor in the food science department. He researches the functionality of dairy foods. Questions for him as we move along today. I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to WPR News. Great to have you along with us today on Wisconsin Public Radio News. Larry Mueller here. Going to be broadcasting live from Door County Tomorrow on the show, we'll be talking to some creative people behind the Northern Sky Theater. And then we'll learn about shipwrecks in the area with the directors of the Door County Maritime Museum. That's tomorrow. Right now, though, we're taking a look at cheese and other dairy products, I think, with John Lucy, who's director of the Center for Dairy Research at UW-Madison. Questions? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk at WPR.org. Let's take a call. Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota. We'll go to you. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I have heard all the benefits of dairy all my life and have eaten lots and lots of dairy. And when you get older, you find out kind of a secret, I think, that dairy, too much dairy can cause inflammation. So it doesn't seem like anyone has ever heard of this. I think that's why a lot of people are changing to oat milk and soy milk and lots of other things. So could you speak on that?
All right. Inflammation relating to dairy. John, comments?
Yeah, I'm not quite exactly sure what the nature of the inflammation is. But like some people, we know that some people do have a lactose issue and they don't absorb it very well, and they may lose some of that lactose digestion ability as they get older. But cheese doesn't contain, most natural cheeses or aged cheeses don't contain any lactose, so that wouldn't be a problem consuming that. But some people have switched to lactose-free type of milks and things like that, and you could test that to see if that was the issue. Am I having an issue with the digestion related to lactose? Now, the proteins too in cheese are very broken down because of all the fermentation processes that are going on to it. So usually those actually will be easier to digest than just the regular milk as well. So you could try an aged cheese. It doesn't have any lactose, and it's so broken down you'll be readily able to absorb it, and see if that has any kind of issue for you as well.
Mm-hmm. Pam, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Again, you can join in, 800-642-1234. You mentioned you've done, the center has done a lot of work on new products. Give us some examples of the kinds of products over the last several years that you may have been involved with.
Well, you know, I can give several cheese examples, but just want to give you some beverage examples too.
Sure.
If you got out to Walmart or other kind of stores, you might have seen, or you could look it up online. It's a product called Good Sport. And this Good Sport was started by a woman entrepreneur from the Chicago area, and she wanted to have a Gatorade type of product that was all natural. And we helped her formulate our product now, and it's gone into thousands of stores across the U.S., and she's raising money. She's created her own business, and it's been highly successful. And this product is actually made from when you filter milk to make some of those high-protein beverages. So we see a lot of high-protein milk beverages at the moment. You leave behind some of the salts. We call them electrolytes, some of the calcium, phosphate, magnesium, potassium, etc., and a little bit of the lactose. But if you hydrolyze the lactose, because we were just talking about some people are concerned about lactose digestion, that's a perfectly balanced electrolyte mix for recovery after you do exercise. And what's been done over the last couple of years is we've taken that permeate, this thing that has been gone through this filtration process, which is mostly water, a little bit of sugar, and many different types of salts, electrolytes, that has been tested in clinical studies and shown it has a better rehydration ability than water or other kind of products out there. So she's launched this product. It comes from milk, but it is not milk. It looks more like a water or permeate. And it's been a very highly successful product for this new entrepreneur. So again, it's looking at something that we didn't really know what to do with. I wouldn't call it a waste product, but it was something we didn't really know what to do. We captured the protein and put it into the high protein beverages, but we wanted to know what could we do with this. And it's kind of a natural source that she's doing. No artificial colors, flavors, or other kind of materials in it. It's a perfectly natural kind of recovery material.
And somebody's going to be saying, what was that product again? What's it called?
Good Sport. It's called Good Sport. And she wanted an alternative for recovery for her what was then our high school kids rather than just drink milk or chocolate milk or Gatorade? Was there something that didn't have some of the artificial colors and things like that in it? She wanted something that was greater to recovery. After you've sweaty, you have run a lot of things, you've lost a lot of salts and electrolytes through your sweat, and you just want to have something to replenish that. Now, there's another kind of drinks which are basically protein you can have in Sure and other kind of products. But right after exercise, you know, right after sweating and after a hectic activity, you really want something that will replenish some of those lost electrolytes.
That is very cool. Listener called, couldn't stay with us, but he's wondering how cheese affects cholesterol levels.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, there was a lot of debate about not just cheese, but various dairy products and affecting blood cholesterol levels. But the issue is primarily that our body is making a lot of cholesterol in various cells throughout our body. So our body makes it, and the cholesterol we get from our diet is often has to compete with the cholesterol that our body is making, and many times it's not absorbed. Even if we're consuming cholesterol, it's not absorbed by our body and it's just excreted. So right now what we think is that, and this is why statin drugs have become so hugely popular in the last 20-30 years, they go in and affect our body's own metabolic activity and shut down the amount of cholesterol they're producing. We do need cholesterol for a lot of important bodily functions, but it was kind of a recognition that just reducing cholesterol in the diet didn't have as much impact as some of the medical doctors would want to, because your body is making cholesterol as well. What I would say right now is that the hypothesis that consuming cholesterol from a food product, whether it's cheese or dairy, directly affecting your blood cholesterol, it's not a very strong kind of link. There can be some effect on it, but a lot of it's genetic and other kind of factors that your body is doing as well. So the other thing you have to think about is when you consume the fats that come from dairy, not all of them are saturated. Some of them are short-chain fatty acids, medium-chain fatty acids. And in the last 10 or 20 years, the kind of story about dairy and animal fats has gone from kind of very negative to a little bit positive, maybe neutral, depending on who you talk to, in terms of things like cardiovascular disease. So it's gone from a negative to, and I think the wind is blowing a little bit, so slightly positive, but that's where we're at right now in terms of the health professionals.
Tom emailed us, is there a connection between dairy and prostate cancer? Have you heard any connections there?
There have been a lot of studies about the correlations between dairy and various types of cancers. In general, I would say for many different types of cancers, we've seen over the years that slight reductions in most cancers with the increased consumption of dairy. But everybody wants to know about every different type of cancer. But I would say in general that there has been a slight negative association between dairy consumption. They don't always know why. It could be the protein. It could be the calcium, mm-hmm. or it could be some of the other things we just talked about, which could be, for example, the bioactive peptides we talked about, or it could be, the probiotic bacteria. It's often not known or understood why there would be some of these correlations.
If I'm not mistaken, it was last week the U.S. Senate Appropriations Committee voted to boost funding for the dairy industry. The increase would include more money for the Dairy Business Innovation Initiative. Why might that be important?
Yeah, we host here at the CDR in partnership with the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association. We host the Midwest Regional Dairy Business Innovation Alliance, which covers 11 states in this part of the world, going east as far as Ohio and going as far west as Nebraska. And that 50% of those funds go in grants to small dairy businesses and farmsteads. So any money we get from the USDA, the program mandates that 50% of it is organized in a competitive grants that go back to help startup businesses or farmstead businesses expand their production. So adding a new bottler for making milk, or adding a new cheese vat, or adding a pasteurizer, hugely impactful for these small little dairy businesses as they try and grow and produce their food locally. So it's really a very important program. And as I say, here in Wisconsin, it supported 35 farmstead operations, but it's given out over $16 million to small businesses around our region. And really, we're talking about getting these small local businesses a start so they can really get going, and very difficult for them. It doesn't build their facilities. Really what they're talking about there is they have to build the facilities, but it's helping them to put in some equipment or specific assistance and things like marketing as well.
Another call from a listener couldn't stay with us and has heard that there are different cows that produce different enzymes, and that's why there are lactate milk options. Can you explain that or more?
Maybe there's a couple of things I just should clarify. So sometimes we've heard maybe in the last couple of years about A2 milk or A1 milk and things like that. And that is one of the proteins present in milk. There are different proteins that you get present in milk. And one of them is a protein called beta casein. And it comes naturally in several genetic variants. What that means is this protein is about 200 amino acids in length, a chain made up of 200 amino acids linked together. In the A1 and A2 variant, there's one amino acid that's different between those. That means they're almost identical, but one amino acid is different than the other one. Sometimes these small little genetic variants are important, and there's an interest in A2 milk, and you can see it in many stores right now, and talking about easier digest because it might affect which peptide is removed during the digestion in the body. Again, I'd say the science is not definitive in that area right now, but some people are saying that they find it easier to digest this A2 milk, and you'll find that sometimes in the store.
This spring, the avian flu virus was found in dairy herds in 9 states, not in Wisconsin. UW-Madison researchers have found that pasteurization of milk kills that. Is that correct? And all the avian flu virus, what do we currently know about possible spread of avian flu to humans through milk?
Yeah, we don't know that yet. I don't think it's happened yet that we can say that it's passed through to humans from drinking milk. But what we do know is that I think it's now up to 12 states and around 150 herds across the U.S., not here in Wisconsin, thankfully, so far. Presumably spread from wild birds, because this has been going on for many years and many decades in wild birds, and it crossed over to start infecting cows earlier this year. The milk from cows who get this virus infection will contain virus, active virus. And so there's been a number of studies. The first study came out here from Wisconsin and from researchers here that show that the heat treatments, pasteurization that we use for all the legal milk that we buy in the stores, that kills it. And that conclusion that they did in the lab was confirmed at Cornell, and was confirmed just recently by the FDA scientist as well, using full-scale equipment. So the milk that you buy in the stores, even if a cow had the virus, it will be inactivated from it. And we do that not only because we pasteurize, not because of virus, which is the current issue we're talking about, but because we know that there is the chance there will be a pathogen like an E. coli, Listeria, Salmonella, or Campylobacter present in the raw milk just by contamination on the farm. So we always pasteurize the products that we buy in the store. So it's very good news. It does destroy it.
I was thinking about organic farms here for a minute, dairy farms. I think we have about 1,500 organic farms in Wisconsin, and USDA has increased regulation of organic food products, like milk or anything else in that area. Comment on that, the regulations and what it means to be organic.
Well, there are a lot of regulations on the farm level, and I probably don't know all of them. But what I'd say is, in general, grass is a high component of the feed that the cows must have. It's not all of it, but there's regulations about how much grass and more grass. There are requirements about, the farm itself, lack of of pesticides and other things on the farm, so they must be free of that for a number of years. Cows must have access to outside areas for them as well. So in general, what you're talking about there is basically, you know, grass, lack of pesticides or antibiotics and things like that added to it, and access to outdoor kind of spaces where they can. That's very important for them. I did, you know, I was visiting an organic farmer here last year, and I said, you know, how about all these cows wanted to go outside and stuff? He said, sometimes when the days are really hot, they'd rather be inside because the fans are all going inside. And we were just talking about it and saying, you know, that it seems, it's like some of the weather we had this weekend, you probably prefer to be inside than outside for 3 or 4 hours, you know. So I can get that as well.
Well, I can get that as well, too. And I tell you what, it's a real pleasure to have a chance to talk with you today. Thank you so much for being with us. And I hope we can do this again. Will you be on again with us?
Happy to be here anytime. Thank you, Larry.
John, thank you so much. John Lucey, director of the Center for Dairy Research at UW-Madison. He's a professor in the food science department and researches on the functionality of dairy foods. Great to have him with us. We'll do it again. And for those listening, thanks for joining us today. This and all our shows are a team effort. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud. Our technical directors are Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive director is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and I hope you'll join us tomorrow. We'll be in Door County, Sister Bay area, for our program. Stay with us, though. Lots more in store right through the day.